Hello and welcome to the second episode of our So Unnamed podcast. I'm Yusha Hajian, and today we are going to talk about the civil war in Tajikistan during the 1990s, a conflict that deeply affected the region and its people. Throughout this episode, we'll explore key historical events and also share a personal perspective through an interview with Susanna, who spent her teenage years in those tumultuous times. Tajikistan today operates almost like a family enterprise. President Emomali Rahmon, who has been in power since the early days of the 1992-97 civil war, has steadily eliminated political oppositions over the years. His now grown children are assuming increasingly prominent roles in the government. Independent media has been severely weakened, barely managing to survive, and corruption is widespread. The country remains impoverished, and a significant portion of its population works as migrant laborers in Russia due to limited job opportunities at home. Critics argue that Tajikistan is moving in the wrong direction, and many observers wonder how the population tolerates the elite's excesses while remaining relatively silent. The answer is the memory of the civil war. So let's take a moment to reflect on the history of Tajikistan's civil war. I was at school, and this school was very far away from my home because we moved away, and I stayed in the old school, in this school which was Russian. And then I remember very well, I was normally, I was always in the school, and I stayed there up to 5 or up to 6. And suddenly, the school was empty, and my class teacher came in and said to me, "Susanna, now you go home." And this boy, it was a boy from a very senior class, a big boy. I was a fifth year pupil. A fifth pupil in the fifth class, and he was maybe in the ninth class, and she said to me, "He's going to accompany you to home." I was so shocked. I say, "Why? I can do it alone." "No, today he accompanies you." I was very surprised, and he accompanied me up to my home. I went home, and since that day, we have no regular schools, and our family had to stay at home for about, I think, a week because it was shot in the streets and it was very dangerous to go out. Civil war in Tajikistan began in the spring of 1992 with political and social unrest in Dushanbe, just less than a year after Tajikistan declared independence from USSR. At the beginning of the war, it was clear that the old Soviet elites lost control of the country. Then the so-called Old Guard had to agree to create a coalition government, which lasted only 6 months, though. When a short-lived coalition government broke down and the long-buried clan and political animosity erupted, rival groups began to hold demonstrations that reflected growing divisions in the society. While these divisions were often portrayed in Western news reports as occurring primarily among clans or regional cliques, many different lines of affiliation shaped the configuration of the forces. Both the pro-government new communist forces and the opposition groups were divided over substantive political issues. The Coalition of United Tajik Opposition, or UTO, was composed of secular democratic, nationalist reformists, local ethnic and Islamic groups. The so-called Islamic forces itself comprised a diverse coalition of Muslim extremists, moderates, intellectuals and Democrats. Led by the Islamic Renaissance Party, they were operated primarily from Afghanistan, where they were believed to receive arms and support from Taliban and Al-Qaeda, though the rebels also had sympathizers and aid from Iran, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Algeria. With each of sides of the war were supported by different regional and ethnic groups inside, ethnic divisions became central to the Tajik civil war. So, overshadowing the ideological differences between political factions. As the war intensified, regional identities became deadly markers. Militias and even civilians targeted individuals based on their region of origin. Civilians were cut and were forced to choose sides based on their birthplace. The place name marked on their passport could mean the difference between life and death. The first phase of the war was complex. Battles were fought in places few have ever heard of before. Not just ethnic Tajiks were involved, but also Uzbeks and Pamiris aligned with the different Tajik factions. However, it is important to keep in mind that this oversimplifies the reality. As said, loyalties were influenced by a wide range of factors. Elements such as religion, social structures, migration, state building, politics, and economics, especially shaped during the Soviet era, were critical in forming individual and group alliances. The conflict seemed to reach a turning point by the end of 1992 when Imam Ali Rahman, who at that time was the boss of a state-run farm, rose to power with the backing of pro-government paramilitary leaders. However, the violence continued. Ceasefires were continually reached by representatives far from the battlefield, but rarely were observed for even 24 hours by the combatants. Only agreements to exchange the bodies of dead stopped the fighting for any significant amount of time, only in one or two places maybe. And this went on, over and over, for 5 years. Casualties were appalling for a country that at that time had a population of less than 6 million people. It wasn't uncommon for hundreds of fighters, mainly government troops, to be killed within just a week or two of outbreaks of fighting. By some estimates, the Tajikistan 5-year civil war left between 65 and 150,000 dead, which works to about 1 or 2% of the entire population of Tajikistan. Most of the dead were Tajiks. People also suffered from the problems that accompanied conflicts. Gunfire was a nightly occurrence. Residents of Dushanbe were gunned down on the streets. Many residents remained in their homes for months and survived on starvation rations. The most basic things were in short supply. Markets were empty. Bread lines were common in Dushanbe. In Tajikistan, we had water, cold water, only 2 hours a day. It was in the morning, only from 6 up to 8 in the morning. We had never, ever hot water, only just in the beginning of the war, only maybe 1 year we had hot water, and 1 year our lift functioned. We lived in the 10th store. Oh. No lift functioned in the 10th store. Sometimes we had to bring water from the first floor to the 10th floor because sometimes we had no water at all. And unfortunately, besides my experience and my memory is that my parents had to stand for the whole night only just to get very bad bread. And the food during the war was so terrible. I never ever forget the taste of this awful bread. It was like, I think this bread was like, I like the idea of our removal into Tajikistan. During the war, there was, of course, there was shortage of meal and shortage of flour to make bread, this substance. And because of the shortage of flour, there was a real hunger, like a kind of in Palestine now, not so terrible, but a kind of. And that's why the bread was made of a flour, a very bad type of flour, which was contaminated with some bacteria. And this bread, for the first day, it was so tasty. It was wonderful, this bread, when you buy this bread, which was made of this contaminated flour. And my parents had to stay the whole night in a very terrible row of people to get these two loaves of bread. And it was so tasty. But on the second day, it was impossible to eat this bread because it was uneatable. It was just a kind of gum. And it was so terrible. And if you eat it, you got just real stomachache. And I never ever forget this terrible bread because my parents were not the whole night at home. And first my mother had to stay in this row and then she changed with my father. And it was so terrible. And I never forget these moments.
Apart from that, somewhere between 10 to 20% of the population, about 1.2 million people was displaced at any given time during the war. Susanna moved to Siberia with her mother and younger sister, but she believes the decision was influenced by her parents' personal issues as well.
I always asked my mother to go out because I didn't like it, and I have all my friends went away. I have mostly Russian friends, and they all went away, and all people, I have Russian friends, and these Russian friends always told me, this Tajikistan is a fucking place, it's better to go out to Russia, Russia is much better than here, here are, these Tajik people are just like animals.
As a teenager, she was extremely happy to finally move to Russia at the age of 16, after spending 6 years in Dushanbe during the war.
I will say I was extremely happy. Just imagine, for me, Russia at that moment as a teenager and under the influence of the stories from the Russian people who were my friends, for me, Russia was like a kind of America from dishwasher to millionaires. I was too naive at that time. I thought Russia is like America.
I asked her what was her first impressions then when she first arrived in Russia.
It was terrible. I was so disappointed. From the first day I arrived into Russia, my first feeling was it was so cold. People were so cold. It was cold outside and people were very cold. And I did not quite well. I didn't feel well in Russia, never ever. And when I came there, I was so disappointed. Besides, we had to live 2 years at the house of my grandparents in the village, in the Russian village, with very terrible conditions. We had a toilet in the street. And it was minus 45 degrees over 8 months in the year with snow for about 1 meter height. And I went from this condition, from the sunny conditions of Tajikistan, where fruits were almost all the year, where it was always warm. I went to Russia and it was terribly cold to Siberia. No fruits. People drank vodka. People use very many bad words, injury words. In Tajikistan, it was not usual that people drink so much vodka or use so many bad words.
Russia was not the only destination for immigrants fleeing the civil war. While western neighbor Uzbekistan closed its borders to Tajikistan's refugees and northern neighbor Kyrgyzstan agreed to allow only refugees to transit its territory, tens of thousands of Tajikistan citizens and many armed UTO fighters chose to flee to Afghanistan, where there was also an ongoing civil war. The border of Afghanistan was guarded by Russian border guards, the Russian 201st Division that remained in Tajikistan after the collapse of the USSR, were often involved in firefights with UTO forces, who tried to re-enter Tajikistan from Afghanistan. Uzbekistan sent troops and later Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan sent units also. Along with elements of Russian forces already there, they became the CIS peacekeeping force. The UTO made no distinction between them and Tajik government forces though. UTO forces not only attacked these peacekeeping units, but also launched a campaign of terrorism against them, shooting them at bazaars away from the battlefield or blowing up their vehicles in towns and cities, including Dushanbe. Susanna recounted an incident where Russian forces were poisoned on New Year's Eve.
And then there was another second incident during the Sylvester. I go to Sylvester to celebrate it to my neighbor. We are dancing and suddenly our another neighbor come and says something terrible happens. And then my friend goes away. What happens? Yeah, the brother of another neighbor just has drunk too much and he doesn't feel well. Okay. And then I went after the celebrating this party to my home and I hear that my father tells to my mother, you know, I'm afraid the neighbor is dead. I saw he was brought away in the carriage for dead people away. I was so shocked. It was a strong young man who had a baby, a newborn baby. He got married 6 months ago. He got a newborn baby and he's dead. I thought, what happens? And then it turns out that there was a terroristic act. We lived in the military basis district for Russian soldiers. And I think this was some national enemy people from the organizations, criminal organizations of Tajiks. They brought a big car, which was full of very, very cheap bottles of champagne. And they just bought this champagne near at the eve of the New Year. At the eve of the new year, because they knew that the Russian soldiers loved to drink alcohol, champagne at the new year.
In April 1994, the United Nations aimed to reconcile the government in Dushanbe and the exiled opposition. So between 1994 and early 1996, six major rounds of negotiations took place in various cities, involving international observers from Russia, Central Asian states, Iran, Pakistan, and the US. Some organizations like the OSCE and the Organization of the Islamic Conference were also involved. While a ceasefire agreement was reached in October 1994 and extended into 1996, it was frequently violated by both sides. In mid-1996, the conflict escalated, with Russian-backed Tajik forces launching coordinated attacks on opposition strongholds. Amid intensified fighting, opposition troops approached Dushanbe and effectively ended peace efforts and undermined UN mediation. In the months that followed, the Rahmonov government negotiated with the UTO to reintegrate the political and military organizations of the two sides. A scattered fighting, however, continued into the spring of 1997. The Tajikistan civil war finally ended with a peace accord in June 1997 that came about after Russian troops helped put down the rebels and the Russian diplomats and Rahman's commanders pressured him and other new communists to negotiate with the rebels, offer a general amnesty and adopt a new constitution. As a result, a power-sharing organization, the National Reconciliation Commission, was set up with the head of the UTO, Syed Abdullah Nuri, as its leader. the opposition was given about 30% of the seats in the coalition government. Thus, after 5 years of war in Tajikistan, a coalition government was formed for the second time. At this time, it included Demo-Islamist oppositions as well. But unfortunately, less than 10 years later, all political opponents of the constitutional government were thrown out of it. Even after the signing of the peace accord, there were incidents of violence. But gradually things settled down and they became the exception rather than the norm. The majority of Tajikistan's people remember this, and even much more. The conflict drained the nation and its scars are still visible 30 years later in many forms. Thank you for tuning in today as we examine both a short history and human stories behind this significant chapter in Tajikistan's past. I look forward to continuing this journey of reflection and discovery of Central Asia with you in the next episode. Until next time, take care.